You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including updates on an incident at the Talent Library, a settlement in Siskiyou County, and why Ashland is taking a hard look at city buildings. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Roman Battaglia, politics, science, and environment reporter.
Jane, you've been following turmoil in the Jackson County Library District, and there was an update yesterday afternoon. Briefly, what happened there?
So the Jackson County District Attorney announced that there is not evidence to charge a Talent Library patron with a crime. That man, Nicholas Johnson, had been watching videos of naked children at the Talent Library branch on a public computer back in December. And so the news, the highlight yesterday was that the DA investigated and found that what Johnson did was not illegal and he won't be prosecuted.
So can you give us a little bit more background on that situation for people that may not be familiar?
Yes. So there were reports back in December that there was a patron at the Talent Library branch watching videos of naked children and babies on a library computer, making other library patrons uncomfortable. And so the police were called. And the DA released some videos yesterday, actually, which is interesting. You can see all of this publicly on YouTube. It's linked on our website. And it's videos of the police body cam footage from that day of them coming to talk to Johnson, and also includes videos that were made by other library patrons of Johnson. You can see that he's watching videos of children in the bath and of a baby's diaper being changed. But the DA investigated, and the Jackson County District Attorney, Patrick Green, says that this does not meet the legal definition of child sexual abuse material. The press release sent yesterday says that mere nudity without sexual conduct or sexualized posing does not meet that definition. So the press release says that even though the videos that Johnson was observing at the library were disturbing, in Green's words, it doesn't meet the definition, and therefore it's not illegal for Johnson to access them or view them. The library does have some filters on its computers for what you can get access to, but obviously they don't block everything. So the DA says that it will reevaluate if new evidence emerges in this case, but at this point they're not planning on charging or prosecuting Johnson for anything. The library district, of course, says they're taking this very seriously. They're working on reviewing policies, training staff, making sure nothing like this happens again. They released a statement yesterday saying that even though this wasn't a crime, they acknowledge the community's concern. They're inviting constructive input on the situation. They're trying to regain the public's trust, all of that.
Okay, so you just mentioned the library's response, but there's been some kind of other drama going on with the library. Where does the library district go from here?
So there was a lot of pushback initially on how the library leadership handled this situation. Some people say they didn't take it seriously enough or do enough initially. A lot of people have brought concerns to the board of directors. And so the board actually ended up putting their library director, Carrie May, on paid administrative leave for about 2 weeks until the board meeting on January 21st. So the board is kind of trying to figure out their best next steps. At one of their recent board meetings, some people had really wonderful things to say about Carrie May. Some people had some more negative things to say. There were a lot of allegations made about what they called toxicity, corrupt leadership, and other things. So the board has been holding a lot of meetings recently and a lot of executive sessions to talk about all of this stuff. They've engaged an HR firm to investigate these incidents and provide recommendations on how to make sure it doesn't happen in the future. They're potentially going to work with an investigative company to maybe investigate these alleged HR issues. They're also having their attorney talk with an employment and labor attorney to receive some legal guidance. So there's a lot going on. There's ongoing developments. And the next board meeting is on January 21st at 4 p.m. So I'll be watching that.
Okay, so we'll probably have more updates after that,
for
it
sure.
Sounds like. Justin, you also reported on a partial settlement in a civil rights lawsuit. Can you tell us what that lawsuit is all about?
Yeah, so this is a class action lawsuit filed way back in 2021, and it alleges discrimination by the county and the sheriff's department against the area's Asian population.
And what area are we talking about?
This is Siskiyou County.
Okay. So
Northern California. There's really three parts to this complaint. So first, it alleges deputies have targeted Asian drivers for traffic stops. According to the ACLU, the data could kind of back that up. So traffic stop stats show Asian drivers are stopped a lot, despite them making up a very small percentage of residents in Siskiyou County. The second issue is about property liens the county has enacted against residents who have not paid fines related to illegal cannabis growing. And I'll kind of get more into that illegal cannabis growing bit later. But again, attorneys say these liens impact Asian residents disproportionately, and they're also illegal because the county doesn't have that authority for these liens. State law prevents it. The third issue involves water access, and attorneys claim the county, through zoning ordinances meant to target, again, growing illegal cannabis, have deprived this one neighborhood, Mount Shasta Vista, of water. And that neighborhood is really unique. People of Hmong and Chinese descent primarily live there.
And so you mentioned a partial settlement. What does that look like here?
So that means both sides have come to an agreement over some of these issues. So the county and the plaintiffs agreed to settle 2 out of 3 of these claims. The sheriff's office agreed to a new traffic stop policy that prohibits explicitly targeting certain races or using stops as a pretext to investigate other crimes. Other crimes in this case is usually transporting cannabis. Deputies must also activate their body-worn cameras during all stops, tell suspects they have no legal consequences for refusing a search, and also offer translations if the person isn't proficient in English. The sheriff's department said in a statement that the agreement is not a substantial change to its policies, but there is a big change in there. So the county will... they must hire an external auditor for at least 2 years for no more than $150,000 per year. And that auditor will review stop records and a randomized sample of body camera footage to make sure that the office is staying in compliance. The county also agreed to remove property liens due to unpaid cannabis fines, basically until, unless state law is amended to actually authorize that.
And so you mentioned that this was a partial settlement. What did the two sides not agree on?
They didn't come to an agreement over the water issues that I brought up. So that will move forward in court. And again, these ordinances and zoning restrictions have impacts in the Mount Shasta Vista subdivision. So this neighborhood, it's a really unique place. So it was a sort of failed subdivision for decades with mostly empty lots. It's in this really beautiful but kind of surreal part of the county in this volcanic rock bed near Mount Shasta. But some years ago, people of Hmong descent started buying up property. A lot of Chinese immigrants also moved to the area. And the sheriff's office has had a big problem with growing illegal cannabis there. It's pretty rampant. If you go there, there are just hundreds of hoop houses. It's in a very dry area. There's not a lot of water out there. And the sheriff's office has struggled in stopping water deliveries to those grow sites. So this crackdown has also impacted, according to the lawsuit, though, people using water for non-illegal activities, so just bathing and cooking. People actually live out there. And, in the past, tensions have really flared between this community and authorities. And in 2021, when this lawsuit was filed, officers actually shot a Hmong resident after a confrontation during a fire evacuation. This was during the lava bed fires.
Yeah, so it sounds like water is even more serious than
right.
We think sometimes. You've reported before on illegal cannabis growing in Siskiyou and other counties. Can you tell us more about that for context?
Right, yeah, so I think this is important. So there's a lot of people growing illegal cannabis in this area, which happens to be made up primarily of Asian residents. So growing cannabis is illegal in the county, and officers, they don't really have an issue with the growing of cannabis specifically. Actually, I've talked to the sheriff a couple times, and just growing illegal cannabis isn't his main concerns. It's the things that kind of come with the growing of illegal cannabis. So there's been a number of murders in the area. The Board of Commissioners declared a local state of emergency last year over the use of foreign-made pesticides at these grow sites. So they find these really toxic and banned pesticides in the area that seem to be imported somehow from China. Deputies also regularly catch drivers transporting cannabis down the highway. So the issue that this lawsuit presents, though, is that just because of a lot of criminal activity happens in this predominantly Asian community, that shouldn't give authorities the right to just target people of certain races. So that's the gist of it. We have civil rights protections to guard against that kind of guilt by association. And, you know, with this partial settlement, there will at least be a third-party observer now, which the sheriff's office actually said they welcomed. But that's something we'll be following, these reports from this auditor.
Okay, thanks so much, Justin. And Roman, welcome back to the debrief. You brought us a report on the city of Ashland's building problem. Can you explain what you mean when I say building problem?
Yeah, it does not mean that the city is building too many buildings. They probably need to build more, especially housing, like everywhere. But it really means the city itself owns too many facilities. So the city council had this special meeting this week to go over its new facilities master plan and this facility assessment that they had contracted. And the master plan had basically come to the conclusion that the city owns too many buildings. The staff are spread across the city in a bunch of different places, like City Hall, the City Council Chambers. There's a bunch of other buildings all over the place. And, you know, it just kind of makes things inefficient. People aren't together, especially if departments are working together on things. And this facility assessment that they created, which looked at all of the different conditions of the buildings, also found a lot of different issues. A lot of the infrastructure, like the HVAC and electrical systems, are close to or already past their end-of-life date, and many of the roofs are also really old. A lot of them need replacement. I think they had mentioned that the average life of all of the assets that the city owns is just around 6 years left on everything. So, you know, things are really old, basically, is what that means.
So it sounds like a double whammy. Ashland has a lot of city-owned buildings, and a lot of those are in bad condition. How did this happen?
Yeah, it's sort of the city's own making. You know, they had made a facility master plan back in 2008, and that plan had recommended consolidating some of these facilities, renovations, and kind of creating this civic campus where, you know, they'd have pretty much all of the city staff working in one place together, and they could collaborate and make things more efficient, and they wouldn't need as many buildings because, you know, even though, you know, you might be using the same amount of space, you're only maintaining this one small area rather than a bunch of different buildings, which increases the cost. They also recommended, you know, repurposing other buildings and divesting some of their buildings and either selling them or leasing them out. But the city staff said now that those recommendations were largely not followed, and that's kind of what led us to this point. It's kind of created this less efficient government and too many facilities for the city. These crumbling buildings have kind of become more of an issue as things have gone on. During the meeting this week, the city manager had said that they've had to move staff out of the city hall downtown because of the failing infrastructure. And one staff member has even had seizures because of the poor electrical wiring. So she says they're looking at moving the rest of the staff out there, and that just means they're going to have to lease additional office space, which costs money. But the city manager said she doesn't want to replace the wiring in the city hall if they don't know what the plan is.
And so what did the city council discuss that week when we say they don't know what the plan is? What are they looking at?
Yeah, they basically discussed this week how they're going to move forward to deal with all of this, because it sounds like at this point the city has to do something. I mean, you know, it's likely that they're going to need to do some sort of major renovations or consolidation of the buildings. You know, but if they don't do anything, it could be more expensive and they'll need more money to just fix all of the stuff that they need to fix. You know, it sounds like whatever happens, they're going to have to go to voters for a bond to raise money. And that could be hard to get residents to support that. There was a bond to help renovate City Hall back in 2020. But unfortunately, they put it on the ballot right as COVID was beginning, and then voters didn't have any money anymore and didn't want to support a bond like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the city council had mentioned that they want to make sure residents are informed and that they know that doing nothing is not free and it could be the most expensive option. So they're trying to figure out, get all the numbers about how much everything is going to cost. And they're probably also going to look at discussing this more with the public at their upcoming State of the City Town Hall on January 21st.
So when could we see the city renovate all these buildings or build a new civic campus?
It could be a while. I mean, you know, I think that based on what they said, it's going to be a long-term project. We probably won't see things finished for maybe 10 years, but the city kind of needs to get the ball rolling now on this. They're preparing the next city budget this year and during the summer, and they talked about it during this meeting that, you know, the city council might look at putting some money towards design and engineering and get things started. They're also going to look at creating a dedicated facilities fund. and putting in some rules that will help prevent the city from, you know, kind of using that fund and raiding it for other pet projects down the line, which can be a common problem in government because
you need money.
It's really attractive, this capital improvement fund. So, you know, we're definitely going to be seeing more talk from the city about the Ashland facilities this year.
Okay, sounds like you have some more fun budgets to cover, Roman. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.